Oh, yeah. There's a break for Tevez.
Oh,
first through, Lucarelli gets around Felipe.
Mamma mia!
And sticks the dagger home.
Argentina classing a beautiful Albi Celeste glass from the ex-Boca Juniors, man.
So the team of the day is, oh yeah, now let's do it. It's still the best online radio or band radio scope and the best show in the whole of the universe, Nielsen Southern Sport. I have the old gang with me today. Nobody's away. Nobody's running away today. I will be talking about, of course, the daylight rugby in Emirates Stadium, at the Emirates Stadium. I know some people don't agree with me. Let me introduce my co-host today. I'll start with Oracle Kachi.
Happy New Year, sports fans. Thanks for joining us and sticking with us all through the last year. Get ready for another fantastic year. I'll be remiss not to mention the amazing feat by LeBron James, 36,000 points. Will he stay fit and active in time to beat the great Kareem? This and others we will discuss. Stay tuned.
All right, perfect. And of course, I have a line card with me as well.
Hi guys, happy new year from this side of the world. It's a pity that Novak might not play at the Australian Open coming up. It is what it is, as they always say. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
All right, perfect. I got Ola Wale with me as well.
Happy New Year, sporting fans around the world. Thank you for being with us over the course of last year. We hope to give you a lot to enjoy this year. Welcome to the show.
All right, perfect. I got Shay with me as well.
Hello, sport fans around the world, and happy new year to you all. Thank you for joining us this new year, 2022. And it was a great festive period, despite the several COVID outbreaks in the English Premier League and the postponement of several matches. We are happy that we were able to catch some of the matches over the break. And I'm sure Debo will be leading that during the show.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Shay. You guys just made me feel so bad. Happy New Year, guys. I did not say that at the start of the show. So I'm going to jump on straight to the NBA, where we have a whole lot of actions. And like Kachi rightly said, the king doing the king, of course. But I will start with this one. Like, I'm going to come to you. The coach of Golden State Warriors came out in the course of the week to say Klay Thompson is going to be starting matches immediately he gets back from the injury. And I'm like, okay, 2 years off. Is that a welcome idea for someone that has been laid off for close to 2 years, if not more, to come and jump straight back into the starting lineup and maybe get more minutes than he should that could potentially damage or be a danger to his health? I want to start your opinion about that, Olainka.
Yeah, Debo, I strongly believe that it's a publicity stunt. I strongly believe so. I don't think it'd be fair for a player that hasn't been playing top flight basketball, who got injured and who is just returning, you know, it would be unfair to just thrust him full time into the game. I wouldn't believe that. He's just trying to achieve two things. One, show that he very much believes and respects the potentials of Klay Thompson. So in a way, he's trying to work on his psyche that, look, you got it. You can do it. Whether you've been away for 2 years or two decades, once you get back, you can do it. One. Then two, also, the second reason I believe why he said that is probably to create a form of sensationalism. Because the truth of the matter is the game has changed in the last 2 years. It's evolving every day. You know, there are different styles, different tactics coming up. Klay Thompson is rusty. Fine. He might have been training with the team. But I don't see him just playing all the number of minutes per game. So I think that by the time Klay Thompson starts playing, we will now see the true picture of things. I don't think Steve Kerr is too experienced to make that schoolboy error. He will not make it. He's just trying to accomplish so many things in just a statement. So I believe that Clay Thompson is going to be gradually reintegrated into the tournament team.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Malaika. Olaya, I'm going to come to you. So last night, Clay Thompson hits 3-pointers 24 times in a row, just to show you that he's still who he is, right? And do you think easing him back is the right decision right now and not starting up games, which I totally disagree with anyways. I'm the foot supporter of Olaika, but I want to know what your opinion is.
Yeah, I think that we need to get something right here. There are two different things between starting and the number of minutes he's going to get. I think what Steve Kerr is trying to do about starting him is this. He's trying to look into the future, trying to look into the playoffs. When we get to the playoff, what do we want Clay Thompson to be? We want Clay Thompson to be a regular starter. I want to see Clay Thompson with our starting lineup, with Steph Curry, Andrew Wiggins,
Draymond
Green, and whoever plays at the center. So starting him doesn't necessarily mean Clay Thompson will be playing 36 minutes, 40 minutes. It's just probably to get the feel with the potential starting lineup or the closing lineup. What I foresee majorly for him is early, in the first quarter, he gets probably like 7 minutes. Then I think his minutes is going to reduce second, third quarter. Then probably towards the end of the game in the fourth quarter, you might see his minutes going up. So I think two things, getting used with the starting lineup, then what should be our best closing lineup. That is what. So I think, yes, it might be in the starting lineup, but I don't expect him to have
so many minutes. All right, perfect. Kachi, and do you agree with Olaika? Do you agree with Olaale on this one? And if Olaale's assertion is wrong and the coach intends to use him for more than 20 minutes a game, do you think it's going to be fair on the health of Clay Thompson, especially?
Thanks, Debo. We have a very close precedence to look at, and that's the precedence of Kevin Durant, who was also away for about the same number of times, 2 years on average, if you look at it. Yeah. And Durant came in and was straight into the starting lineup, averaging about 28 minutes a game for the first 2 weeks until he started chucking in more minutes. I expect that is what Steve Kerr would do. So I agree in that aspect with Olaale, because you obviously want to see what your team would look like when every single star you have is playing together on the court. We've always known that Golden State Warrior plays best when they play small ball. I took a look at their roster, and they only have two centers in Kevin Looney and James Wiseman. And these are not Wiseman apart. They don't really have any other person dominating in the paint pretty much right now.
Yeah.
So they basically need to have more than one option in Steph Curry from that perimeter shooting. So it's important. And for these players, especially for the game of basketball, rhythm is very, very, very critical. And sometimes, not all the time, sometimes the games are lost in that first quarter. You know, a team, and I will use the Lakers, their last game against Portland. The Lakers never trailed from the first five seconds of that game. They did not trail because they took hold of the first quarter and ultimately the first half.
They were playing against
the Portland is struggling. We'll get to that later. But I'm basically saying most times, and especially when it comes to the playoff and you want to defend home court, you need to see how a Clay can get his rhythm back. Getting, you know, and Clay is a person, is probably the best catch and shoot three-pointer out there. He hardly dribbles the ball. But he does that because he has a fantastic point guard. So I agree with Olaale in that aspect, that it's to develop rhythm, to see what the lineup will potentially look like. But when
they win the championship.
When we discussed it during the production, I told you, if it's up to me, I'm using him. In fact, I'm giving him. I mean, this man has been relaxing. I checked his salary. He's on 20. I think he's on $37.9 million.
Don't be a party pooper.
I'm not a party pooper. I'm only saying, Oga, you have collected salary for 2 years without working. No vacation for you. He's supposed to come in.
Now is the time for you to repay. You repay the face.
It will start, but it will obviously be on a poop. Guarded minute.
All right. Hold on, Ali. $84 million in 2 years.
After getting injured.
Can you imagine?
Okay. $84 million after getting injured.
He deserves it. He won them so many rings. But I just want to add something. Not to really counter your point, but just to put a different perspective for what Olawale and Kachi said. What if we have a situation of Leonard Kawhi that, you know, not fit, not good enough in terms of health, and he came back pretty much too early, and he's back on the treatment table pretty much right now. What if you have a situation like that?
I think this is the situation. I assume Kerr is a very experienced coach. I expect him to manage.
To manage him properly.
They will have to. They will monitor. They will monitor him to see his progress on the court, and see if there's anything for them to adjust his minutes or reduce his role. Of course, they will do that. I'm not sure. Honestly,
Olali, I'm just worried because I know. Sometime last year, or a couple of last year. I'm not so good with years, anyways. They tried to rush Klay Thompson back.
I didn't think they rushed him back. Have you noticed that their defense this year has been super, and it's because of the fact that everybody has been putting in their shift. You know, everybody has been putting a lot of running around, a lot of strategic positioning. If you push Klay Thompson to the limit too early in order to maintain that solid defensive structure, he might kaput and just.
You know how much I love Klay Thompson, so I'm just all out for his good health. I don't care about the money. I probably will not be able to earn one tenth of what Klay Thompson have earned in the last 2 years in my lifetime. I don't really care about how much he has. $84 million. That's a whooping money, man.
And that is $6 million more than what he earned when he was an active player.
Let's not forget that for the defense, the Golden State Warriors, they defend really by being on the front foot, you know, because they shoot so very high percentage from the 3-point. Yeah. It makes teams also change their strategy. So teams that typically will go for the mid-range, 2-point post-up and all that, because they are now so far behind due to an incredible first half or second half by Steph Curry, shooting maybe 9 straight 3-points.
But realistically, Kachi, sorry to you. I'm really sorry. I really apologize for this.
No problem.
Stopping you midway. But once Klay Thompson comes back, his feet... And he's fit for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
In my own opinion, my knowledge is limited, right? But I don't think anybody can win this championship apart from Golden State Warriors. If they all things being equal.
The thing is, all things will never be equal in the sports of the NBA. You always have to look
Thank
at injury.
You.
I mean,
Thank
the
you.
Toronto Raptors will not have a championship if all things were equal.
I'm just saying.
It took the big toe of Kevin Durant to prevent the
Brooklyn exactly
from winning the championship last year. They could have gone on.
But another thing is this. All these things we're discussing, all it takes is just one trade to destroy the entire league.
Yeah,
that is just it. Just one trade, the whole landscape will change. So sometimes we don't need to get too much ahead of ourselves in this thing. Let us just focus on whatever we have at hand now. Just one trade.
Olali, don't be a
the conversation with
some teams are just a Ben Simon away from being the juggernaut they should be. Or Damian Lillard away from being a contender. So
of course those guys
Olali is right.
Those guys would not have a choice but to move in the next future, anyways. Especially your brother Ben Simmons. And of course, we said so much time about Klay Thompson. He's worth it anyways. That's the guy is one of the top 100 of all time. So you can't knock Klay's also. Of course, Bilal, I'm gonna come to you now. They mad DeRozan. You know, it looked a couple of years ago like the last guy that you want to see, you know. But right now, everything has changed. It's doing it and doing it big for the Bulls right now. Two straight 3-pointers to win the game for the Bulls the last three games. How would you rate his progress, or should I say the comeback from being ordinary to not to extraordinary to above average?
DeMar DeRozan has always been an all-star in the NBA. I think we are always a prisoner of the moment. We tend to forget things easily. This is a man that I think is the all-time leading scorer for the Toronto Raptors right before he was traded to the San Antonio Spurs. He was like 5-time All-Stars. So DeMar DeRozan, for the fact that they couldn't get beyond LeBron James, LeBron James, both in Miami and Cleveland, doesn't really make him a small player. And I think going to the San Antonio Spurs was not really what he wanted. I think the bigger news is the fact that when during the offseason, the Lakers, they had a chance to sign him but the head of the Sacramento Kings, but rather they went for the elephant in the room, Russell Westbrook.
That's another story. Come on, man. That's a low blow.
You could have imagined how the impact of DeMar DeRozan in that Lakers team
going to
Chicago at the beginning of the season, most NBA analysts said it's not going to fit well with Zach LaVine. It's not going to that both of them look similar. They couldn't play together. But they've done the former OKC coach. He has done a very great job with the team. I think the addition of Lonzo Ball has actually made it very easy for DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine to play together. So I'm very happy for him. What he did in the last two games, you know, against Pacers, they were 2 points behind when he took that last shot and they won the game. The same thing applied against the Washington Wizards. And in NBA history, no player has made two buzzer shots in two consecutive games. Shot to win a game in two consecutive games, back-to-back games. In the history of the NBA. So I'm happy for him. For me, if I'm to make my list of the All-Stars today, I'm selecting both DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine for the backcourt of the Eastern Conference.
All right, perfect. I know a particular player did not play for 2 years that people gave him like 2% or 3% to be part of the All-Stars sometime last year. I'm not going to mention the name of the guy, but we're talking about the guy since we started the show. Kashi, I'm going to come to you now. So KG said, the Brooklyn Nets does not deserve to win against the Clippers because they were terrible, right? Mm-hmm. How much we agree with KD right now?
And when
are we seeing Kyrie back and change the guide for because it looks like okay. Let me repose the question, Kachi.
Mm-hmm.
What trade or whatever mid-season trade, whatever do they need to do right now to make them a potential championship winning side? And because if your star player is coming out to say we don't deserve to win, we're not good enough, then somehow.
Personally, I think the major trade that the Brooklyn Nets need to do is to trade to get a vaccine. to get the COVID-19 vaccine administered to
Kyrie
Irving as quickly as possible. The way the team is currently constructed, they have a big three that will compete even with a very healthy Golden State Warriors.
Of course.
Even without one of those big threes playing last year, because they played all together in less than 20 games last year.
Yeah, yeah.
They were just a size 13 Kevin Durant shoe away from going to the NBA Finals.
The NBA final. Yeah,
so I really don't think it's a personnel thing that the Brooklyn Nets need. But that's why I agree with Kevin Durant. They went into that game seeing that the LA Lakers were undermanned without their biggest star in Kawhi, and assumed that game was won already, forgetting that you still have to play for 48 minutes. So what the Nets need to do for me is to change their mindset that things will not, because of how we are constructed, teams want to beat us. That was how it was for the Showtime Lakers, for the big three in Miami, for the big three in Celtics. Teams play their best against them because you want to have it. Okay, even if I don't win a championship, the year the Nets won it, we beat them in Brooklyn. So I think that's really what has to change. And I think it's a big thing when their biggest star is the one calling out all the other players.
Okay.
He knows what's happening in the dressing room and he knows what they can do best. I don't think they need to sign anybody.
All right, perfect. Looks like we're currently praying for time anyways, but I knew this was gonna happen anyways. 36,000 points for LeBron. It's the youngest to do it at 10,000, at 20,000, at 15,000, at 17,000, 18,000, 19,000, 20,000. Kachi actually said from 1,000 to 36,000. So it's more or less a king doing a king. I don't think there's anything else that we need to talk about LeBron. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. But what else are we going to say about him? It's just, okay.
Yeah, okay.
The only thing that we could add to it is it going to be fit enough to break the record of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? Do we think he's going to do it? I feel all he needs is just one season and a half, and he's going to do it. Do you think he has that in his legs?
I think it does. I think even though he will not admit it, I think that's one of the things he's playing for. The second thing he's playing for is hopefully he gets to play with his son, Bronny, if not on the same team, but at least father and son in the league at the same time. It's possible, but it will mean LeBron not missing any game. It will also mean that he has to maintain his career average of 27, 28 points Hey, come on. LeBron has missed. The season is less than halfway in, and he has missed close to 20 games already. So Father Time has called. Father Time is no longer Father Time is calling. Father Time is here. He's sitting with him on the bench. It's how he discusses with Father Time and how he can he was able to get 43 or 46 points in 29 minutes. So if he can maintain that load of playing only 29 minutes in the regular season, it's doable.
I think he would do it just like Ronaldo.
He's just one major groin injury away, drop seven goals
against Almeria and the other poor teams in La Liga.
On a more serious note, I think that's what he's playing for, in my opinion.
Okay. Olayinka, do you think he has legs? Quickly.
LeBron is a great player. I call him the 4-4-4 man. You know, he has 4 NBA titles, 4 NBA MVPs, and 4 Finals MVPs. If anybody is going to do it, I think it's LeBron. He has the mindset. He has the physique. He has the mentality. and I think he's going to do it. He's playing very well. He's carrying a lot of responsibilities on his shoulders, and it will be so sad if he doesn't do it. But my mind is telling me that he's going to get it.
All right, Olali, you have a defensive opinion.
And I will make him one of the greatest ever.
I just did some quick mathematics now.
Yeah.
Presently LeBron is 2,306 points behind Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Uh-huh.
So if he averages 25 points a game, which I think it's very reasonable, that means he's going to need 92 games to achieve that. This season, if he doesn't miss any other game this season, no, this season, he still has like over 40 games this season.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So this season and next season?
And next season, averaging 25, which means it looks very, very realistic.
Yeah, man, I'm even saying next season. I'm not even counting this season. I'm saying next season and half afterwards, he should be able to do. So, So for the first time in history, everybody's agreeing on that, right? For the first time,
because the team is nothing to talk about. That's why we're talking about.
Okay. Not like the daylight rugby in Emirates.
Oracle.
Shay, I want to come to you now, Shay. Novak Djokovic is resisting the vaccine 100%, and it was how do you say that in English again? It wants an exemption from taking the vaccine, but he wants to play at the Australian Open. And nobody is ready to give it to him. Do you think it's fair to allow him to express his opinion of not taking a vaccine and competing, or it's going to lay bad precedence for the ATF if they allow that?
He's entitled to his beliefs. Novak Djokovic is a living legend when it comes to tennis in the world. So I think he's entitled to that, but I will not be happy if the ATF decides to give him an exemption to participate in the Australian Open. I've seen what anyway, everybody, we've all seen what the pandemic has done to the whole sporting world generally, not only tennis. We've seen what has happened in football, also in basketball, all over the world. And we've seen so many people clamoring for people to take the vaccine so that they can protect other people, including their family. Uh-huh. And if there's a particular athlete, I don't think one person is bigger than the other. The sport is there for the entertainment of the fans, not actually for the athletes. So I believe if the ATF decides not to give him an exemption, I'll actually give them a thumbs up for that. Yes.
Okay. That means loss of revenue for them as well. Because when you don't have the COVID,
I think they need to take a stance for the big players to actually understand what they are preaching. If Novak is going to be the scapegoat, I think that is fine.
Okay. Perfect.
And more importantly, if he doesn't go to the Australian Open, he's likely to lose his number one position, which will be reduced revenue for him as well.
Come on, these guys don't stop talking about reduced revenue. These guys make too much
money. These guys are millionaires.
We're not talking about Sarah Aziel. Someone that did not play basketball for 2 years, earned $84 million. Even if I come to this world 10 times, I don't think I can earn $84 million. Honestly, $84 million. Ah, man. Okay. Shay, I want to stay with you still. Otis versus Martins in their weight division. In the boxing world, Otis, the name sounds scary, and he came out knocking the guy down twice as well. Give us the full gist of that.
Okay, you said Luis Otis sounds scary.
Yeah,
I think his nickname actually sounds more scary because his nickname is King Kong. They call him Luis Otis the King Kong.
Wow.
Okay. Luis Otis actually was one of the fighters that exposed Deontay Wilder. There was Deontay Wilder, Luis Otis 1 and 2. of wow. which it was actually a one punch that took Luis Ortiz out of that bout. He was winning both bouts before those knockouts. And I give him that respect. And also to put into consideration that Luis Ortiz is 42 years and still doing it in the heavyweight division. Much respect to Luis Ortiz. Charles Martin, on the other hand, has always been here and there in the heavyweight division. I think his highlights is the IBF title he won in 2016, and he won it for like 6 or 7 months thereabouts. When
5 days.
Anthony, it's 5 days. Thank you very much. Before Anthony Joshua actually took the belt from him. So he has not really fought really top opponents like that. And I was not surprised that he was knocked out by Luis Ortiz. But it is also important to say he was actually leading in the fight. He had 2 knockdowns against Luis Ortiz in the first round and the fourth round before the knockout. The left hook to the temple was almost unconscious. He didn't really know what was going on. And Luis Ortiz totally took him apart in the sixth
round. He saw the darkness after that.
Yeah. It was nowhere. He didn't understand where he was.
Oh, wow. All right.
So that was what basically happened.
All right, perfect. We're going to short break right now. And when we come back, we'll be jumping straight to the daylight rugby in Emirates and more of Lukaku. Don't go anywhere, guys. Yeah, so we'll not be talking about Antonio Brown, the guy that decided to be, Kachi, do you want to talk about the guy, or do you want to give us like?
I think I can just for a few 30 seconds talk about this troubled man who seriously needs psychiatric help. This was a man who left almost $60 million on the table when he stormed out of the Oakland Raiders after he left Ben Roethlisberger and Pittsburgh Steelers. He got the GOAT, Tom Brady, to stick his neck for him, moved to Tampa Bay. Yes, won a Super Bowl with Tom Brady last year. And he threw a temper tantrum in the box game against New York Jets over the weekend, taking off his jersey mid-game, throwing it to the fans and storming into the dressing room. Bruce Arians, the Bucs coach, was asked about him, and the man said, well, he's not going to talk about Antonio Brown because as of that moment, he stopped being a member of the Bucs. Right now, I can guarantee you that none of the other 31 teams would even touch Antonio Brown with a 10-foot pole. He has damaged his brand, he has damaged his reputation, and he can kiss his NFL career goodbye. What a sad story.
Wow. I hope he has so much money in the bank so he doesn't go broke.
Anyway. That's the problem. The $60 million he left in Oakland is still affecting him.
Oh, wow. $60
million. Very terrible story.
That reminds me of that short guy, Dennis Schroeder, that left. How much did he leave?
$82 million.
No, but at least for him, Dennis Schroeder is still trying. And we thought he was not going to blend. We thought he wasn't going to do well. Yes, I know he wasn't. We thought he wasn't going to do well in Celtics. But Dennis Schroeder still has an opportunity to get bag again. He's still playing actively in the NBA.
Yeah.
For Antonio Brown.
100%. Kachi, I want to stay with you as well on this one. The daylight rugby at the Emirates Stadium. The penalty that was that, oh god, I'm stuttering. Kachi they call him an oracle for a reason. It's scaring me, guys. If you're listening, Kachi is scaring me. That's why
Ladies and gentlemen.
Kachi, I'm going to reface myself, and this time I'm not going to be scared.
Okay.
That was a brazen penalty for Arsenal in the first half. Kula made the game potentially 2-0. The VAR was not checked for reasons best known to whoever officiated. And this same referee did something a couple of years ago in the EPL. It was demoted, and it was in lower leagues for 4 years. And they decided to bring this guy back to the EPL and officiate maybe not a grade A match because it's Arsenal versus Man City. Everybody mm-hmm. would have expected Man City to win convincingly, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they brought this guy back to a potentially top six match. And he did this. In no word is that penalty for Bernardo Silva a penalty. In no word is it. For me, of course. I want to sample your opinion. For me, this Arsenal team is young. Things like that mm-hmm. change the complexion of the game for them. You expect them to make mistakes. These are 23, 24-year-old boys. They are not mm-hmm. their kids, so to speak. You know,
yes.
This will change the complexion of the game to me. For them, right. how disdain, what kind of disdain look should we give to the referee? That's number one. Was he perfect the day? Was it terrible? Was he horrible? You know, and going forward, don't worry. The next question will be for Lali.
And I know we've argued about this severally. You did say it clearly that certain decisions will go against youngsters that would demoralize them. And I think that is primarily what cost Arsenal at least a point in the game. The youngsters not living in the moment, not being able to focus on what was at hand, but instead mentally dwelling on decisions that had gone against them. I told you that Arsenal lost that match purely based on rookie mistake. And I wasn't talking of just mistakes on the field of play, but rookie mental mistakes. Gabriel, a penalty had been given. Focus and let's move on. Let's secure the match. The match wasn't lost when the penalty was given. There were still several minutes, a lot of minutes to play. Instead, his immaturity came to fore. And he got a yellow card and ultimately was sent off in the 59th minute. Beyond the referee's abysmal behavior, and I don't want to only take the referee because the referees in the EPL this season have not painted themselves in good light.
But this one have a bad precedence too.
Because you are a fan. Let's call a spade. Referees generally this season in EPL. And that's why I said, remember my conspiracy theory, that let's bundle all the EPL referees and send them to Germany and bring the German referees to come and referee in England. Maybe that would be a solution. However, coming back to the game, Arsenal and the youngsters should still feel proud of themselves in spite of the results. They were playing against the potential champions elect, who at that point were about 6 or 7 points ahead of the nearest competition. At almost full strength, almost. They had the heavy hitters on the pitch. With an average age of 23, 24, Arsenal youngsters stood no chance. Secondly, Arsenal also had the opportunity to take the game when Martinelli lost a glint-held edge chance, which you happen to tell me that he was impeded by the referee. I didn't see it that way. But overall, I think it can be a moral victory. And that's how I expect Arteta to sell it to the youngsters, as against telling them, oh, we were wrong. They should say, for 90 minutes, we stood toe-to-toe with the champions elect, even with little to no experience, and we gave a good account of
them. Yeah, that defeated them like 5-0 at the start of the season or thereabouts.
Exactly.
Olali, I'm gonna call to you now, Olali. Sometimes, in situations like this, what you need is team leadership. For all my criticism of a sub-talented player like Roy Keane, I know for a fact he is a superb leader. And when you have situations like this, and the only two leaders that you can look up to in the team is a docile, I'm sorry to use that word, a docile Lacazette and the most erratic footballer that I know after Balotelli, Granit Xhaka, are the two leaders that you have to look forward to. At this point, what kind of leadership do you expect Arsenal to be? They are doing a fantastic job, no doubt about it. I don't expect Arsenal to finish in the top four this season, but there's a progress from what we saw last season and two seasons ago. But this team lacks leadership. They lack leaders in the team. What kind of step do you think they should take to get in leaders into the team as soon as possible as well? Olali, I'm talking to you.
Well, yeah, that's a bit a presently, I, like you said, it was obvious that they lost the game due to some inexperience, even though that doesn't still probably, that doesn't give the referee the pass. It was a terrible officiating. But at times, you have such things that happens in football. You need to keep your calm. You need, like you said, you need leaders to take charge during that time, because if that record was actually an avoidable record, immediately the penalty was awarded, a leader will have calmed down everybody that nobody should react again. Because they've already, because when he got the yellow card, it was after the penalty was already scored. So yeah, there was nothing again. Why are you arguing with the referee? So in that sense, but bringing a leader, I don't know what kind of leader they can bring. I think, like Kachi said, this could be what Teta could use as a reference to everybody, not only Granit Xhaka or even Lacazette. He has to make it like, let them probably rewatch the video of the old game and analyze to them, each and every player, what they did wrong. Everybody should take responsibility. Even if your captain is not talking, as long as it's your teammates you are controlling, there is no offense to that. It is when you are talking to the referee that you are not a captain. That is where it's a problem. They want only the captain to talk to the referee. But the other teammates, you can stand up. You could sense that your teammate is doing something wrong. This guy, you are losing it. Or we are still in this game. Call your teammate to order. That is what you should stand up for yourself. I think they can use this. It's a painful loss. Because for me, I'm looking at it from a bigger perspective for the league. I didn't want City to win that game for so many reasons. I wanted that league, because knowing that Chelsea and Liverpool might likely cancel themselves out, which eventually happened, I didn't want City to extend that lead to something that would not look like the league is over. And Arsenal gave the good account of themselves. They should have made it 2-0 in the first half, even that. But so, from the leadership point of view, it might not necessarily be about bringing a player in. It's about them learning from what they did wrong. It shouldn't be about the senior players alone. It should be about everybody.
Okay. Olale, sadly, I don't agree with you anyways, because I can imagine what everyone on this table was like when they were 23, 24 years old. It's always a different ballgame. It's always a different ballgame. And if I can take you back to 2000, I think Portugal versus France, when they awarded that penalty for France, right? Zidane ultimately took that penalty. But throughout, Zidane was not involving in all the trash talking. And we know how that played out. So sometimes, if you have someone like Arteta in his playing days, just someone like Arteta in that team, or Parme Tasaka, or Cesc Fabregas in that team, as a whole G, 31, 32, that have seen so many things, it could actually change some things. Right now, what I'm trying to say is I'm challenging the policy of just all young players. Sometimes it's needed to be in that team. Of course,
that is why they are going to learn from me.
I hope they do. 23-year-old boys, maybe not. I hope they do anyways. And of course, Shay, I'm going to come to you now. Lukaku was bought for £98 million. I can't quote it correctly in my head right now. Brought back to Chelsea at the besage of Abramovich himself. He signed off on it. He wanted him. He could have gone for another striker. He has the money to spend, but he wanted Lukaku back. Lukaku came back a couple of games. He was playing very well, pretty well, scoring goals. We discussed it before. I know I'm pretty sure Lali and everybody on this table can actually attest to that, that the kind of supplies Lukaku is getting, the kind of formation does not fit in. Now that brings us back to two questions. The team is a dysfunctional team. To create a balance, you needed this formation that the coach is playing. And to make Lukaku work, you have to change the way from that formation. Of course, if I'm too cool as well, I will stick to what works for me over a 98 million signing. Because ultimately, if the results go bad, I'm going to be sacked, right? Lukaku went out, did an interview. He wants to go back to Inter Milan. Inter Milan was his best life, blah, 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 in the middle of the season to trash talk this team that is going through a torrid time, so to speak. Do you think Lukaku is in any way form or fashion right with this interview?
Yeah, thank you, Devo. I think that question is actually a no-brainer. Lukaku is a professional, and I think being a professional, it's supposed to be on and off the pitch. You are not supposed to grant that kind of interview and say such things, especially against a coach that you are still playing under. Players take the liberty to say one or two things about a coach that left their team or a coach that they just left his team, not a coach you are still playing under. And come to think about it, Lukaku is new to this team. He has not played up to 6 months. I believe he's the last person that's supposed to come out to criticize his coach, no matter what is going on. Right now, I'm not supporting Tuchel because I still believe that a team that has so many defenders scoring and picking 3 points is a very, very delicate team.
Exactly.
And I want to believe that whatever Lukaku is trying to say is right in the football sense. Because for me, I think you're supposed to play your team in a way to make your strikers benefit from chances. Your strikers are supposed to be the guys that win you games.
Exactly.
Focal point, guys that win you game. Then the days that things are very hard, defenders, midfielders chip in, and that is how you have a title winning team. That is the way I understand football. So in that aspect, I think Lukaku is actually frustrated. He's right to be frustrated. Every striker wants to eat 15 to 20 goals a season, especially playing for the top teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand his frustration. But as a professional, it is very wrong to go to the press to grant an interview and criticize your present coach.
Okay.
I think that's totally wrong. And whatever happens from it, I won't really blame Tuchel.
All right, perfect. Olayinka, staying on this, Lukaku actually granted this interview 3 weeks ago. So that means Lukaku was not even playing at all that time when he got an interview, which makes it worse because he was down with COVID as of then. Before then, he had injury. Before the injury, he was playing well. He scored a couple of goals. Came back against Aston Villa, provided an assist, and scored a goal as well to win them that match against Aston Villa. They didn't struggle. Do you think this boiled down to just simple frustration? This is my own idea, and I stand to be corrected. I feel when it was brought back to Chelsea, there was maybe a gentleman agreement that this is the way we are going to play. And it turns out that they are not playing him that well, that way. That was actually the intention. So he's feeling, he's feeling let down by the promises that was made to him. I stand to be corrected, but I want to sample your opinion on that. Olayinka.
Well, when you buy a player for £97.5 million, his own expectation and the expectation of everybody, including probably the board of directors or Babalo himself, is that we'll be playing week in, week out. But, I'm not, I feel Lukaku's pain. He was doing very well at Inter. I mean, if he had stayed there, probably would have ended up as a legend.
No, they will have sold him. Inter is broke. He's going to go that way.
That's history. Now, right now, when you look at what he's going through, is allowing his frustration to get the better of him. Thomas Tuchel, when you look at him historically, when he was at Dortmund, he used to play a lot of attacking football. But when he got to PSG, right, he came up with his 3-4-3 formation or 3-4-2-1, which is what he has implemented in Chelsea. Now, what does that mean? He plays with three defenders, two wing backs, two pivots in the middle, then three attackers with one main attacker, in quotes. Now, that main attacker, it doesn't mean that you have to be a standard attacker that will just stand there and wait for the ball. You don't have to be Rumbi Rashini Yakini, if I may use that name.
Uh-huh.
It's a striker that interchanges with the two playing behind him. Unfortunately, I've studied Lukaku over the years, and I don't think that tactics really suits his style of play. Mm-hmm. He's your typical, old-fashioned defender, old-fashioned attacker. Put him in front, give him the ball, he holds up play and allows the other, he frees movement for the other players, gives to them, they shoot, or he moves with the ball. So right now, I think it's a clash. It's a clash with the tactical setup of Thomas Tuchel. And you cannot blame Thomas Tuchel for not trying to jettison his set formation because of one player who you know is not a CR7 or a Messi or a Lewandowski for that matter. So as such, what's his name? Lukaku, he definitely did the wrong thing by expressing his frustration publicly. All he had to do was just wait, beat his time. And like you said, he just came back from injury. Even in that last match that he played, that he scored, he wasn't looking too fit by my own reckoning. Wasn't looking too fit.
I agree with you.
All he needed to do was just calm down, reintegrate himself into the team. Right now, he's in limbo. And guess what? He cannot go back to Inter because Dzeko is delivering the goods there.
Inter cannot afford it.
They don't even want him.
Olale, that leads me to my next question. So this looks more like the board signing than the coach signing. And this is what we'll have at the end of the day.
Well, I don't think that's
what it looks like. Because if reverse was the case and you were the coach, you wanted the player. That is my perspective. So you understand where I'm coming from.
You want a player.
You in your head, you know how you want to use that player. You understand the strength of that player. But now if the player was bought for you, then this kind of problem will probably occur.
Honestly, we can't really say, but probably because Chelsea as a football team, they have this history of the board or the owner signing players for the coach. We knew about the Andriy Shevchenko. But even the Shevchenko one, if it has actually worked out, I'm not sure the whole story of him being signed by the board will have come down. Coming to this Lukaku, it could be either way. We don't know actually. It could be either be the board signing or a case of who is available. Because I think Chelsea actually wanted to sign Haaland. And probably they were priced out of the whole thing by Dortmund. So it could be a case of probably the next available. But for me, I think the two major issues here is more of formation and the personnel. Why are we quite agree with? I don't quite agree with Lukaku by saying probably Lukaku. Even at United, where games Lukaku start from the right side, even though you could question his control, but it's not that a static number nine. He is a bit mobile. Sometimes he could easily play very well from the right. In fact, during his days at Everton, Roberto Martinez most times utilized him in a front three from the right side, and he scored a lot of goals. For me, I think the major problem with the setup at Chelsea, number one, 3-5-2, 3-4-3, 3-4-1, whichever way you want to put it, it's a bit of a delicate formation because what it ensures is that it gives you solidity in defense, that assurance, like, okay, we are very assured. But what makes a 3-5-2 work very well is a very good number 10. A very smart number 10, intelligent, who can carry the ball, who can create. And that is what we don't really have in the present-day football now. You don't have that kind of number 10. The kind of number 10 you have now are those people who want to play between the lines. They want to play very close to the box, who can just make those final passes. Not the Zidane or the Okocha who could run around, the Rico star of this world. I think you know the kind of number 10 I'm talking about.
Yeah, 100%.
Those are number 10 that
could work with that kind of formation.
For a 3-5-2 formation easily. Now, what did Antonio Conte did when he discovered that he didn't have that number 10 that time? Then he now modified the formation from a 3-5-2 to a 3-4-3. Okay, instead of us having a number 10, then we still have wingers that we need to use. Then he played Hazard
and
Pedro or Williams just beside, what do you call it?
Diego Costa.
Costa. Yeah. So it still gives them that feel of a front three that you might have if you're actually playing a 4-3-3
formation.
So you still have that front three like that too, who doesn't really have much of defensive responsibility, who can still go all blazing in the attack. That was what he did, and that was why it really worked for him. But if you look at Chelsea, one of the front three is Mason Mount, who is not really a winger. Mason Mount is most like is a very good player, a decent player, but he's modeling his game towards a Frank Lampard. More of somebody who wants to arrive at the edge of the box,
yeah,
as eat those loose balls, that kind of guy that wants to look out for your number nine,
exactly. Yeah, 100%.
If you watch most of their game at the beginning of the season, even the last game they played, there were times where you expect Mason Mount to to cross or to make a pass,
square play, yeah,
you rather want to take a shot, and you could see Lukaku's frustration. I think for me, it's like we said a couple of weeks ago. That those wing backs cannot continue to score goals. And what I've noticed is that the attacking midfielders are not playing, they are not trying to find Lukaku enough.
They're not playing to his strength. So it would have been better for you to have a Pulisic and an Akanziek flanking.
But Lukaku. Those ones too, you can't guarantee their fitness.
Exactly.
Exactly. Those ones, you can't guarantee their fitness and some of these things. So I think that is the major problem. But there was no need for the interview, whichever way you want to look at it. Anyways. People have just take his time, because when he was actually playing, it wasn't like he wasn't having a playing time.
I think
their decision too has made things worse now.
Yeah. Yeah, Olale, I think it's more or less like Lukaku wants to show that I'm not a failure. I failed in Manchester United. I'm back here with the big money.
Yeah, like you said.
So if Lukaku, I don't want to use me now, right, I have to talk now or never.
But like you said, I think Lukaku by now was expecting himself to be like, I have scored 12, 15 goals and the United guys are suffering and you are seeing what you are missing.
Exactly.
But now United, even though they are not doing well, they don't really feel like they are missing anything. I think it's more of a psychological thing too.
Yeah,
playing well for Lukaku. It feels like by now he should be proving a point to those guys
that get to see
in the north side of England.
Yeah.
Where it rains a lot.
Kashi, I'm gonna come to you now, just before we go to the next thing, which is another deadline robbery on Nigeria this time around. But I'm gonna come to you. Who do you think is going to outlast themselves? Lukaku or Titi at Chelsea? Because we've seen this kind of story over and over again. And it looks the coach only suffer for it in the long run.
And ultimately, the coach will always suffer for it. The coach gets all the credit. The coach gets all the blame. I know that Ibrahimovic has fashioned himself around Florentino Perez and how hands-on Perez is in the hiring or in the signing of players, and then saying, okay, I've gotten you a Galactico, you coach, make it work. Ultimately, the results will determine who gets to go. Right now, the results are not looking too great.
Too good.
Chelsea have dropped points against teams they should be beating.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that points towards a potential dismissal for Thomas Tuchel. The only thing that may salvage Tuchel's appointment until the end of the season, at least, is when they go in January to the World Club tournament and maybe come back with that trophy, because I don't think Ibrahimovic has that trophy yet. That may give him another year, but things are shaping up to look like it will be too much to go. However, now that I say it, I just remember this point that we don't really have grade A elite coaches out there right
available
now.
Yeah,
100%. If Thomas Tuchel should go right now,
who do they replace?
You can say that they're already thinking of that, because I understand John Terry, the Chelsea legend, has returned to the club. He is back in Chelsea.
Yeah.
Ibrahimovic takes knee-jerk reactions. Whether it works or not, he does not care. I mean, let's not forget, he's the same man that brought Abraham Grant to coach a Chelsea team. You know, and so
Roberto Matteo.
So the Matteo who won the championship. He can always argue. All I'm basically saying is everything is pointing towards a Thomas Tuchel leaving before the 94 million pounds
player.
Because this is the same player when he wears the red and black of Belgium, is unstoppable. So I'm sure that is the argument they will take to Tuchel. Make it work. I can't remember. I just immediately forgot his name now. But the Belgian national team coach makes Roberto Martinez. They make this guy smell like roses. Even though, to Wale's point, he plays behind a very fluid set of number 10s. If it's a defensive-minded Axel Witsel to Eden Hazard and his Togen Hazard, Kevin De Bruyne, always feeds him the ball. But they can make that argument that this guy is not as bad as you make him look like. So Thomas Tuchel is more at risk to leave before
that would be sad anyways. Kachi, I'm going to stay with you on this one. We have 10 minutes left. Dennis, they said we did not send email on time. For real, it's sad. We have a hot property in England right now at Watford. To come to the Nations Cup and potentially be, at least this guy is better, 100% I'm sure, is better than Ojonu Gallo at his prime. You know, no disrespect to Ojonu Gallo, but he's better than him. And here we are, they are robbing us of our treasure. How many do we have? They are taking one away from us. Will you say it's fair? We won Watford did. I think it's more political. even if we said the mail left, even if we sent the mail late, they could still have given us the courtesy of releasing a Nigerian. Would they do the same to Brazil?
Debo, ladies and gentlemen, dear listeners, let me first of all say that the way Debo is shouting, they are killing us, they are robbing us. Debo is not enamored with the Nigerian national team, first of all. Secondly, and to his question, we all know that the rest of the world, they don't place significant importance to the African tournament. Hence, and this is not the first time we will see coaches play hardball in releasing players, either of Nigerian descent or for even other African countries. In the case of Watford, the same thing happening with Emmanuel Dennis is currently happening with Sa, the Senegalese superstar playing there as well. The coach has come out to say he is the coach and he's not releasing any player. Yes, there are ways these things can be handled, but also you should also, before you come back to the African national, the respective national team, knowing that your tournament is mid-season, you are supposed to cross your teeth. You are supposed to make sure every fault can't come back to you.
Yeah,
you know, so that when you want to go to the Court of Arbitration for Sports, right now, if you go there, they will interpret it to the letter of the law, that the law says, give us a 2-3 week notice, and you did not do that. Let's not forget the famous burofax of Lionel Messi. Because of that letter of the law, the burofax was negated. Because these lawyers are really, really smart. And I think the respective FAs, both the Senegalese FA and the Nigerian FA, played into the hand of Watford and any other club holding back the internationals. It will be Nigeria's loss, because I totally agree with you. Emmanuel Dennis is better than Ojonu Gallo. But even before the tournament itself comes, which is coming in a few weeks, Dennis has not been used effectively by the last coach, Jen Hadraw. And I don't even think an Augustin Eguavoen, who is going with four goalkeepers, has any plans to use Emmanuel Dennis. So maybe the young man should stay back and build his career well.
All right. Perfect.
I think my own two cents I want to add to this is this. Number, another thing is this. Like Kachi said, we have a tournament that is played during the middle of European season. A lot of these coach, Ranieri is under a lot of pressure. They've lost last of their six games or something like that. As far as he can do, he's trying to keep as much players he can now. And with COVID, now still having its own issue, they can't just have. So, like Kachi said, we played into their hands.
Exactly.
Because they are not comfortable with this tournament holding at this time of the year. And you and your on your own parts, you are not doing the right thing. And I think another problem is even like the coach we
sacked.
He did not want Dennis
exactly.
in the first instance.
In his plan. Yeah. I think that's what really led to all these invitation not being sent.
All right, because we have 4 more minutes left, I'm going to talk. And Olayinka has actually commanded me. He terrified me, pointed, you know, he actually told me that I must talk about the African Nations Cup. So Olayinka, I'm going to start with you. Who is your favorite for the African Nations Cup?
No doubt about it. It's Algeria, the defending champion.
You are this Algeria.
They are Pretoria of Stars, and they are, and the way they call
it. Which Pretoria of Stars they have apart from Real Madrid? You started the game. That's Imani that has not played active football for donkey years.
They have Umas that plays for Napoli.
Players. Which players do they have? They have this player that is always going, Brahimi, that is always going free of charge across Europe. That Portuguese, that guy that played for FC Porto before.
FC Porto?
Brahimi, or what's his name? He's always going for free. Anyways, we'll write it down. All I can say is
Feguli, Sofian Feguli. Don't forget.
Feguli that played at West Ham. Hey, Oluwaba. Okay.
I play for Valencia too now. I play for Valencia.
Okay. He's presently in Turkey. Okay,
he's the captain of course,
he should be in Turkey right now.
Yeah, you're talking about
Islam Slimani that came, failed at Leicester City.
Islam Slimani.
Okay. Shehi, who's your favorite? Like I already said, Algeria.
We'll see what will happen to Algeria. They are the defending champion, so you have to give that to them. Okay, but I think Senegal should be my favorite for this competition. They've been a little bit unachievers in this competition, and they still have all the stars, actually.
Of course.
Diop, Diaw, and the rest, Henri Camara.
Okay, good. Okay,
Henri Camara. Thank you. So I think these actually I expect them to perform.
Olali, what about you?
Also, I like to mention that this competition will be having like 2 debutants in the name of Gambia and Comoros. Comoros actually caught my attention. This is a country of less than 1 million. That's less than maybe Lagos. less than Kebbi. Wow. So I'll be looking forward to see that particular country playing this competition. Right. That is good for the AFCON.
Olali, your favorite? We have 1:58.
I don't know. Favorites in this competition. There are too many favorites. That's just the issue because you have like 6 teams who probably are as far. Considering the fact that it's a bit difficult for defending champion outside Cameroon in the 2002, then that Egypt run of 2006, 2008, and 2010, you hardly see defending champion repeating. What do you call it? Defeat the following competition. As good as the Algerian team is, that's why I might not pick them. I'm a bit tempted to go for Senegal, but I think I'll just watch out for Senegal and Egypt.
Okay.
Because in Nigeria, we always disappoint. I'm not sure we are good enough.
All right, Kachi, who is your favorite?
Me, unfortunately, the African tournament always follows the region where the tournament is hosted, save for a few exceptions where Egypt won in West Africa or won in South Africa. Now that it's being hosted in Central/West Africa, I expect a West African team, and there's no better West African team than Senegal. Aliou Cisse, their coach, says he's been waiting for 5 years to win this. I think they are best placed to win it. They have the right best set of players And if Nigeria wins it, I will celebrate, but I don't expect them to. Senegal for me.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Since you guys have chosen, I'm not going to choose. But if I'm going to choose, I'm going to choose Cameroon, because Cameroon will always do Bago to win the tournament. That's a wrap. As that's the show. My name is Nigeria Adepo Ale. I'm still the best show. Have a wonderful sporting day, guys. Bye.